Well, fall has arrived, which means our insect world is preparing for overwintering. And so we thought it a good time for another edition of What's Bugging You, our program about the insect world with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, who is also an associate professor of biology at LSUS. This program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. I'm Bill Beckett, the program director for Red River Radio, and we invite, as always, you to call in tonight with your questions about our insect world, both the fiendish insects and the friendly insects, at 800-552-8502. Once again, the number is 800-552-8502. And Dr. Burden, so glad to have you back with us tonight.
It's my pleasure to be back, Bill.
So the latest news from the CDC on Zika shows that we have well over 800 people in the United States, women who are pregnant and have contracted Zika. And could you fill us in a little bit more about the latest Zika data that we're gathering from the CDC as this problem kind of spreads?
Well, initially, when Zika first came upon the horizon, the only people that were infected with the Zika viruses are the people that traveled to the areas where the Zika was occurring. And then we found out that it can be sexually transmitted. And so then we have some cases that remain right here in the continental United States. And now the worst news of all, which we knew was coming, and that is we now have proven cases of mosquito transmission from person to person in South Florida. And that is probably going to spread. The CDC, Human Health and Services Agency, they're all working with the state of Florida to try to curtail it, you know, confine this area as soon as possible. And they do now know that it's spread to a couple new neighborhoods. And there is a company that has genetically engineered some mosquitoes, and they're going to be voting on that. The people really don't want that because they don't know. They just hear genetically modified.
And kind of makes them fear.
And it makes them fear, just like the same with genetically modified plant material, food material. But I think genetically modified organisms are the way to go, and let me tell you why. First, there even in the Arklatex area, within the listening area of Red River Radio, there's approximately 160 species of mosquitoes. And every one of these species of mosquitoes take the blood male, the females do. But there's only two species of mosquitoes that can transmit the Zika virus, and that's Aedes aegypti, what we call the dingy, and then Aedes albopictus, which is the Asian tiger mosquito. And they are here. But if we were to release genetically modified organisms, we would only be basically killing out 3 to 4 species of mosquitoes. There would still be plenty more mosquitoes to have a stable ecosystem. So just think of it as weeds. How many weeds can grow up in your yard? If we get rid of 4 types, there's still plenty there to grow up in your yard, and we're not going to be decimating the entire weed population. We're not going to be decimating the entire mosquito population, and the ecosystem will still stay stable.
Now, this genetic modification, then, does that have to do with their reproductive organs, or is it something having to do with their immune system? What are we doing to the actual mosquitoes?
There's actually 3 avenues in which they're going. The first avenue is to change a gene inside the mosquito that would not allow the virus to multiply. And so that would be one avenue. The second avenue is genetically engineer male mosquitoes to be sterile, and then they would mate with fertile females, but she will lay infertile eggs. Now, going back to the gene that doesn't allow the virus to replicate, that is the one I think that has the highest promise. Another one that they're doing is that when a female lays female eggs or daughter eggs, those will never survive to adulthood. Mm-hmm. And so there's several ways to go. And because we're approaching this from so many different areas, then the speed of resistance to these type of scenarios is going to be a long, long term developing. And so this could be a fantastic tool to take care of. If it takes care of the Zika, it's also going to take care of the chikungunya, and it's also going to take care of the dengue. And they're also doing some work with the malaria mosquitoes as well. You know, a child dies every 30 minutes in the world of malaria. Right. And we've got to do something to turn that around.
And the malaria, I mean, that's been a plague for, you know, millennia, really.
Absolutely.
Zika seems to be relatively something new, although I'm sure it had been around in different forms or by different names, but we've just come upon that here in the Western Hemisphere.
That's very true, yes.
So as far as, like, eradication of Zika, these mosquitoes, do they travel up north as well, or are they regionally confined? I mean, if somebody in Maine gets bit by a mosquito, is it going to be an Asian tiger mosquito? Are they growing up there?
I'm not sure exactly what the northernmost range is for an Asian tiger mosquito. They come from Japan, so they must have a pretty high northern latitude.
Hokkaido Island is quite cold. Yeah,
and so I just use that as a reference. And that reminds me of something else. Not everybody who gets the Zika virus actually has symptoms.
Right.
You know, just like with West Nile virus transmitted by the mosquitoes, a different species, by the way. Only the very young and the very elderly are susceptible to some of the more severe symptoms. And, of course, we now know that pregnant females are having a problem with the microcephaly. And as well, there seems to be a correlation, maybe not a cause and effect, but a correlation between the Zika virus and what we call the Guillain-Barré syndrome. Mm-hmm. And that's an autoimmune disease of the nervous system. So basically where your body turns on its own nervous system. Right. And so there's people that, it's been actually very impressive with the amount of time and the work that our scientists are doing to combat this problem. Unfortunately, there's not a vaccine yet.
Right. And that was going to be my next question. Yeah. You know, where on that side of the spectrum are we at as far as
I don't think they're close. If they were, we'd be hearing a lot more about it in the news. You know, they're certainly not ready to go to clinical trials or anything of that nature yet.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, and you can give us a call tonight about anything having to do with our insect world, those common household pests, or anything exotic. You can call us at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Dr. Burden is ready to answer your questions tonight. And we're going to move on to winterizing our homes. This has been a wet and a season, it seems like, suitable for the infestations to grow around the area. What have we seen as far as the largest problematic insects in this area over this, fairly wet season?
Well, due to the lush growth of vegetation that does harbor a lot of mosquitoes, and we are seeing an increase in insects that feed on plants, especially on the garden plants. But it's also been a great season for the butterflies. I've seen more butterflies this late summer, early fall that I've seen in a long, long time. But one thing that I've noticed is ants. There seems to be some type of an ant explosion, and not just the fire ants, but many of the other type of ants that can be pests in household areas. And so I wouldn't be surprised if we get some call about ants right now. The other thing that just came up on the horizon, and I just discovered this yesterday, Bill, we've oftentimes talked about the emerald ash borer.
Yeah.
And there's now, it's now been confirmed that it's in Bossier Parish.
Okay.
It was in Webster, now it's in Bossier. And so the number one way that the emerald ash borer is relocated is through people moving firewood. And so right now we're telling people not to move firewood between parishes or between counties, and that might slow down the spread of the emerald ash borer, which is a small beetle, smaller. You could probably fit about a dozen on a penny. They're that small, but they're beautiful if you get them underneath the microscope.
Yeah, but they do terrible damage to
terrible
the trees.
Terrible damage to the ash trees, absolutely.
So they get in there and basically drain out the pulp, is it?
They do.
Basically like blood suckers only on trees.
And ironically, it also causes the limbs to take on different growth patterns.
Okay, so a little gnarly limbs and things.
Mm-hmm.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and we would love to have your calls tonight at 800-552-8502. You can call in anything about our insect world, both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind. Dr. Burton is ready to take your questions tonight. The number again is 800-552-8502. So as we get on, now it's wintertime coming on, and that means insects will be either hibernating or seeking refuge.
Right.
And, of course, our houses are great places for insects to hold up on the winter. Hey, that's what we do.
It's nice and warm. And one thing that I tell people to control year-round, not just in the winter, but summer, spring, and fall, and that is water leaks. Insects have to have a source of water. And so if you can control their access to water, oftentimes you can control the insects. This is especially true for termites and ants and cockroaches as well. But cockroaches are a little bit more resilient to not having a water source than other things. So if you want to insect-proof your home, it's all the logical things. Caulk any entrances around the doors, around the siding. And what I tell people about weatherproofing their doors or weather taping, is that the term I'm looking for?
Weatherproofing, yeah.
Is if you can see light coming around a door, underneath the door, or a window, then an insect can get through it.
Right.
And so you need to make sure all the doors and the windows are tight. And there are some mosquitoes that can actually, you know, come through even in some of the colder days. So before we get to the hard freeze, going back to mosquitoes, you want to drain all standing water. We call these the 5 D's. Be careful at dawn and dusk because that's when they're biting. Dress appropriately. Defend yourself with insect repellent and make sure all your doors are sealed so they can't get into your home. And that applies to many, many, many insects and scorpions and spiders, oh my.
Yes. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton, and you can call in right now with your questions about the insect world and how to protect yourself or how to cultivate good insects at 800-552-8502. The number again, 800-552-8502. We have Matthew on hold right now from Longview, but first we've got Mike up from Nacogdoches. Mike, what's your question tonight? What's bugging you?
I was wondering if you have any thoughts on how to get rid of yellow jackets around the house.
Well, with yellow jackets, they're going to build their open nest normally in a protected area, up underneath the hanging bucket, around eaves, even sometimes in trees. And the best thing I do is once a day I walk around my house, and especially in the late afternoon, and if I see any yellow jackets flying about, if there's a nest there, you're going to see some activity. And then if you see activity in 2 or 3 days, then you want to investigate to see if there's a nest there. Now, they just might actually be out foraging for prey. But 2 or 3 at a given location, and then you can, if you're brave enough, knock them down and stomp them. But I like the old insecticide spray that can shoot 27 feet. But make sure that you do it late in the day when they might be home, and that way you get the highest kill percentage. I know that sounds terrible, but that's what I do. And don't go out there at night because if you're standing next to a light, two or three are always going to escape, and you don't want them then to be attracted back to you due to the light. And so that would be my suggestion. Due diligence. Get the nest while they're small. Don't let it build up until it's a big population. That's one thing. And it's just simple observation. Or let me tell you something else. This is really cool about yellow jackets and wasps in general. If you can find a low dish that's yellow, put soap water in it, and they're attracted to that yellow, and then they'll come down to investigate and get in the soap water and die.
Yeah. soapy water.
On a yellow dish, in a yellow dish. And normally the shallower, like a yellow pie plate or even maybe a yellow Frisbee would work.
Right. But these yellow jackets, I was living the ground, I think, around the house. And I'm thinking because you go outside to eat and sit at the table, or four or five will show up immediately, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're yellow jackets. I'm not 100% sure, you know.
Well, there's a lot of bees that nest in the ground, too, that if you don't look at them real close, could resemble yellow jackets as well. So, you know, just be diligent, and if you have something that's coming in and out of the ground, you might want to investigate that and turn the hose on them.
Right. I'm going to try the yellow dish. I like that idea.
All right. Thank you for your call, Mick. Matthew.
Thank you.
All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can call us up right now with your questions at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now, and we're ready to take your questions. And we go next to Matthew from Longview. Matthew, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I'm thinking about bees, too, so I got stung by one, and I think it might be a bee, but I have a question. Can bees sting twice?
Well, honeybees can't sting twice because when they sting, their stinger gets ripped out of their body. And if you get stung by a honeybee, then you want to make sure that you get your parents' help to take a pair of tweezers and remove that stinger, and that will help the pain to go away faster. Now, there are some bees and bumblebees that can only sting multiple times. And my advice to you is just to be very, very careful when you're outside. A lot of wasps and a lot of bees are not that aggressive, and they will not bother you if you don't bother them. And I remember the first time I ever got stung by a wasp. One was laying on the ground, and I went to sit down, and I put my hand down to stabilize myself, and boy, I got stung. So accidents can happen, but you need to be very, very careful and aware when you're outdoors.
Okay.
You okay, Matthew?
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502 with any question concerning our insect world. That's 800-552-8502. I've always found that with bees and other things that are flying around me, the less I move, the less aggressive I am, the less likely they are to either light on me or bother me. They're just checking out whatever it is that moved into their territory. And it's when I swing at them that they get to dive bombing on me. You know?
Well, that's true. And what I do is, especially if I'm walking and I see one, you know, coming to surround my head, I just keep moving. And pretty soon I will move. They hunt in a very territorial way.
Right.
And so if you move out of their territory, then you're going to be safe.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have lines open at 800-552-8502. We go next to Betty from Gladewater, Texas. Betty, what's bugging you tonight?
We found a scorpion in our house this weekend, and we've lived here for over 20 years. I've never seen a scorpion in the house or in the yard or anywhere, and I just wondered, we actually had recently been on a trip, and we wondered if we brought it home from West Texas in one of our suitcases, or if there's a scorpion population here in East Texas, and if so, what should we do to keep safe around them?
Well, let me ask you, what color was the scorpion, and what was its size?
It was small.
Yellow tan?
Two inches about, and I would have said it was sort of a brownish.
Mm-hmm. Most of the time, the scorpions that are in the western part of the United States are going to be larger and almost blackish. And what you've described is our local scorpion. And this is the time of year where things move about. You know, it's between summer and fall. And when it's warm and dry, they want to move into the house to seek shelter and moisture. When it's rainy, they want to come into the house so they don't drown. And so it's been such a crazy weather year, that's what I would blame it on. Unfortunately, very fortunately, the scorpions that we have in this area, their sting is no more worse than that of a bee or a wasp sting unless you're allergic, just like some people are allergic to the sting of wasps. And so if you find them in their house, normally they are lost, and they really don't want to be in there anyway because there's nothing in there for them to hunt.
Right.
I scoop them and throw them back outside. Did that answer your question, Betty?
It is, and I just wonder if, I mean, I'm actually comforted by the fact that if they're not as dangerous or painful as I thought they were.
Yeah, a lot of people really freak out about scorpions, and there's really no need to at all, you know.
Well, I feel much better. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, Betty.
It's all those movies about scorpions in Africa. That,
you know, the things Hollywood does to, you know, mess people up.
Well, you know, I watched one with giant, you know, mutant scorpions once, but I'm not afraid of those either. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502 with any question concerning our insect world, both fiendish and friendly. Go ahead and call us up right now. We have lines open, and we're going to go to John from Kennard, Texas next. John, you're online. What's bugging you?
Thank you. I've got a question I've had for a long time regarding flies, probably the harsh fly or big flies like that. Whenever I'm using my circular saw in a carpentry project for years, it's just a few minutes after I start sawing, I have a fly actually alight on the saw. They seem to be attracted to something. I just wonder if you've had any experience with that.
Just a little bit. And I just read an article that insects are much more, and this includes spiders, are much more attuned to vibrations than we ever thought they were. And so it would make perfectly good sense if they were attracted to a circular saw, you know, with the vibrations that comes along with using a circular saw. In fact, they did some interesting studies on jumping spiders. I read it a couple weeks ago. And they didn't even think they could hear, but now they can realize that they can pick up vibrations, even small vibrations that we never thought they could. And that would be my answer to that. And, you know, nobody likes horse flies or deer flies around them, so I would just wear long-sleeve shirts if you can while you're doing that kind of work to protect yourself, because they can inflict a very painful bite, as I'm sure you're aware of, John.
Yeah. Well, I think in the future I'll just have my wife do all the sawing out
there. I'll let Mr. Beckett handle that one.
I think you might want to consult with an expert on that one.
Yeah, well, she's not listening now, so maybe I'm safe. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, John. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call right now with any question regarding our insect world, both fiendish and friendly. At 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We go next to Otis from Anacoka. Otis, what's bugging you tonight?
I'm wondering if wasps have any significant value as pollinators.
Yes, absolutely. Wasps are excellent pollinators, as bees are as well. And a lot of times, it's directly or it's indirectly. Sometimes they'll pollinate flowers as they hunt for prey. But yes, wasps can make very good pollinators. But not all wasps can, though. You know, especially like the spider wasp and the dirt daubers and things like that.
Okay.
Anything else, Otis?
That's all I had today.
Thank you.
Hummingbirds also make good pollinators as well, in case you're wondering. So if you happen to have a hummingbird feeder out, listen to the next bird calls in November. We'll tell you how to keep that water fresh and pure so that it does draw hummingbirds when they are in migratory season. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call with anything regarding our insect world at 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now. Again, that's 800-552-8502. Jay from Texarkana, you're online next. What's bugging you? Hello, Jay. Ah, there we go. Hello,
hi.
Jay.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, now we can.
Oh, hi. Hi, my question is about boar worms. That's all I know to call them. they're little tiny worms that get in your potatoes before you dig them, and they bore little black holes into them. Are you familiar with those?
I am, and they're actually not worms. They're actually the grubs of certain beetles, and oftentimes that's when the soil is kept too moist. That's why we plant potatoes in hills, and so that the basically the roots and the stolons of the potatoes can have a drier environment, and it won't attract the grubs. And so make sure that you plant your potatoes in hills, and that will decrease your opportunity to have those grubs feeding on them. And, of course, most of the potato pests are foliage feeders, like the Colorado potato beetle.
Are they laying eggs in the potatoes?
No, the immatures, the grubs, are only feeding. The adults are the ones that lay the eggs, but the grubs are the immatures. They'll grow up to be adults, though.
They leave tiny little blacks.
I know. Just cut them out. The rest of the potato is fine. That's what I tell people when they find corn earworms, and they're just cut that piece of corn off and go ahead, and it's fine. Don't worry about it. You know, you don't have to throw the whole potato away. You don't have to throw the whole ear corn away.
How about an insecticide to do away with them?
There might be some systemic insecticides that. What you need to do is call your county extension agent and ask them about systemic insecticides for potatoes, or Google that online and see what you come up with. It's been a long time. When I worked in potatoes, and I worked in potatoes in Wisconsin, we never used a systemic, but that doesn't mean that one's not out there. In systemic, that means that you pour liquid in the ground and it's taken up by the roots, and it kills the insects that are feeding on the plant.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Very welcome.
And your agricultural extension agency is always a good resource for any of this information.
Absolutely.
They are always willing to help. That is their role in life, basically. And hats off to them. All right, we go next to, first of all, let's give out the numbers, 800-552-8502, the number you can call right now to get your question in to Dr. Beverly Burden. We're going to go next to Ralph from Shreveport. Ralph, what's bugging you tonight?
Hi, I just wanted to ask about bees and mushrooms. Are there bees that feed on mushrooms? And if so, do they help spread the spores?
There is not a lot of nutritional value in mushrooms. We like to eat mushrooms because of the taste, but there's not much nutrition in mushrooms. But I don't think that a wasp or a bee would be feeding on mushrooms. Most of the time, especially with bees, they have more of a lapping mouth part rather than chewing mouth parts, and that they feed on nectar. Now, there are some bees that have chewing mouth parts as adults, but they're not really using them for food sources. They're using them to build reproductive galleries in wood, like the carpenter bee, to lay eggs in. And so, but if they come into contact with mushrooms, they can pick up the spores. I tell my students that one of the key differences between bees and wasps is that bees are very, very hairy, and wasps tend to be rather smooth and not hairy. And so that is what makes bees such excellent pollinators. And so they could potentially spread the spores if they were in contact with the spores. What's the background to that question? I'm very curious.
I'm sorry, say that again?
The reason you asked that question, are you having mushroom problems or wasp problems? Or
no, not at all. It's just a theory that I came up with a couple of years ago. And I could talk to you more about it at another time.
just go to LSUS. My email's there. Send me an email, and I'll be glad to answer any more questions that you have with that, Ralph.
It's Dr. Beverly Burden at LSUS, Burden. So, And you can find that information on our Facebook or on our website as well, redriverradio.org. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we're taking your questions tonight at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question concerning our insect world is fair game tonight. And we go next to Randall from Shreveport. Randall, what's bugging you?
Hi. It's actually not about insects, but arachnids. I got. I work on ATMs, and some of the ATMs are in these little kiosks, just a little building for the ATM itself.
Right.
And they have been filling up with spiders this year.
Hmm.
Is there? It's a real pain to get an exterminator out there because we have to go out there and open it up for them and everything. Is there anything I can do that I can just throw into these little kiosks to keep the spider population down?
I don't know why the spiders are being attracted to ATMs unless they're in there predating on some of the insects that are attracted to ATMs. We know that there are certain types of ants that are very much attracted to electrical systems. And there's a couple theories as to why that occurs. But if I were you, spiders, thank goodness, can't fly. You know, I would either just brush them away, or you can take any type of, you can go to, you know, any of your big stores, your warehouses, your lumber stores, anywhere they sell insecticide, and they're going to be insect and spider sprays, and they're going to be pyrethrins, and they're going to be just effectively in getting rid of the spiders. But you can get rid of them once they're in there. What to, you know, there's too many cracks and crevices in those kiosk type things. I don't know you could prevent their entry unless you just completely sealed it off.
Yeah, so there's nothing I can leave in there that's
no.
Like a poison or a bait or anything that'll kill them off after they get in?
Not for spiders. You can bait ants, you can bait and trap a lot of insects, but not as far as spiders that I know of.
Okay, because mostly what I do is just go in and knock all the webs down, work on the machine, and go on my way. But
that's what I would do.
Yeah. All righty. Hey, thank you. Y'all have a nice evening.
You too, Randall.
You too. I wonder if those were Wall Street spiders. So, yeah, there you go. Give us a call, 800-552-8502, with any question regarding our insect world. Both the fiendish kind and the friendly kind are welcome. And you can even call in with how to get those beneficial insects into your area as well. That's 800-552-8502. Again, 800-552-8502. We go next to Terry from Jonesboro. Terry, you're online. What's bugging you tonight?
Great. I have a nest of ground hornets, and I was just wondering how many could possibly be in there, because they've been there for a couple of years. It seems like there are more now.
Well, colonies can expand in time, so I would be surprised if a nest hasn't gotten larger over time, Terry. And there are safe insecticides that you can use. If it was me in my yard, I'd drag the water hose out there and flood them out. And if you do that enough times, they're going to move and leave, or you're going to drown enough of them to where it's not going to be a situation anymore. And that's about as ecologically friendly as I can think of. And I'm surprised that with all the rain that their populations have been that way. But they build those entryways in a really tricky fashion. Or you can just get a bottle of 7 and pour it down there, and that'll take care of them.
A bottle of what? I'm sorry?
S-E-V-I-N. It's a... It's an insecticide. You can get it in dust or liquid, and just follow the directions on the bottle.
And watch out when they come out, because they ain't going to be happy about
that. They will not be happy at all.
No, they will not. I have just one other quick question. How can I get more fireflies in my woods?
Yeah. I love fireflies. They're one of my favorites. They're always the most active right at dusk. Going back to your ground hornets, though, what I would do if I was to pour 7 down that hole, instead of just running like crazy, I'd put a big metal bucket or something on the top of that, and that way they can't, you know, get to you.
Right.
But
that's a good idea.
And as far as fireflies are concerned, they are coming back into the urban environment a little bit more, because people are only using insecticide as needed anymore. It used to be people would just go out there and spray for no good reason, but we're being very more ecological friendly with our spraying. And so undisturbed habitats, because the females can't fly. The females are actually living like little grubs in the ground. And so undisturbed habitat and not a very good use of pesticide-free areas will increase your chances of bringing fireflies back into the area.
Excellent.
Would underbrush help or things like that to where
no,
they can?
No, not a lot of underbrush, because the way the mating systems, this is so cool, the way the mating systems are between fireflies is the female is flightless and she's on the soil, she's in the ground, and the male flies over and he flashes a certain pattern, and if it's a female of his species, she'll flash a certain pattern back, then he'll go down and they'll mate. And so you don't want a lot of underbrush, because you need an open area so that they can see each other's signals.
I guess I was thinking more of like dead leaf clutter and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That they could live under, and
yeah.
it would create a moist area, and
yes.
They could crawl out on
yeah,
top during
yeah,
the
yeah.
evening. So
I thought you were talking about shrubbery.
Right, yeah, shrubbery.
Over.
Yeah, I misspoke. So you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502 with any question regarding the insect world. We have three calls online. JJ and Rosalind, you're up in the queue. Kevin is next. Kevin, what's bugging you tonight?
Okay, thanks for taking my call. I kind of have a complicated question. I'm kind of curious if you can comment on this phenomena of disappearance of the bees and whether or not that is really happening. And if it is, maybe what are some of the theories to explain this, and possibly what are some of the implications for the country? And I'll get off and just let you answer the question. Thank you.
Okay, Kevin, first of all, is it real? Yes, it is. It's a phenomenon that we're calling the colony collapse disorder. And what's happening with the bees is that it's a combination of a virus and a mite. A lot of people may not know what a mite is, but a chigger is a mite, and most people that live around here understands what chiggers are. And these mites actually get into their respiratory system and causes them to die. Now, there is some concern that a certain type of insecticide called neonicotinoids or neonicotides might be involved, but there's less of that than there are with the mites and the viruses. But they are coming back, and it would be catastrophic to lose our honeybee population, because 80% of all of our agricultural crops rely on bee population, to the point that it was so bad out in the state of California that they had semi-trucks running up and down the highway. People would rent bees. Come park your truck here for a week, and so your bees can pollinate my crop, and then they pick up the truck and move it someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming back, and colony collapse disorder is becoming less and less of a problem, and so we're very hopeful for that, Kevin.
However, on Facebook, you still see the memes going around that says it's at the apex of the problem. So remember, a lot of that stuff going around on Facebook and other social media could be years old. So check the date
Absolutely.
On the original post before you start passing that stuff on. Well, you are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. We have three callers in the queue, and we go next to JJ from Bossier City. JJ, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I've recently moved to Louisiana, and the thing that's bugging me are the ants.
Mm-hmm.
They are vicious biters, and I've gone around looking for any outcropping of them. Primarily, I see it after rain.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surveying my yard right now, and it looks like I got like a big, huge strip right up against the foundation of my house. And every attempt I make at going in and putting the powder on it and everything, there's seemingly no way to keep them away, and then when they get in my house, it's just, you know, horrific. And I just wondered what you could say in regard to the ants here.
Two things. One, the fire ants that are able to sting, they really don't bite. They sting, so you got to make sure you're talking about the right end of the animal. There is a chemical, and I can't give you the brand name, but I can give you the chemical name. It's called acephate, A-C-E-P-H-A-T-E. It's a lot better. It's a very white dust. You only need to put a teaspoon on the mound, and I guarantee you it is the best thing out there on the market. Now, it's highly unlikely that the fire ants are coming inside. Fire ants don't come inside very often, but we do have up to 4 to 5 different species of ants that do come inside. And what you need to do is track, if they're trailing ants, track them back to where they originate from and then take care of them there. If they're on the outside, it's easy enough just to get some regular ant killer and put out there. It's a lot easier to kill those other species than the fire ants. And if they're inside your house, they're probably not carpenter ants if you moved from the north. We don't really have carpenter ants here. But you'll need to find where their nest is and then treat the nest. Did that answer your question, JJ, I hope?
Yeah, but I found that they all like to feast on me.
Oh. Well, stay away from them.
Are they all stingers?
No. Mainly it's just the fire ants that are the stingers, unless you get like hundreds on your skin, and I don't see you allowing that to happen.
And fire ants, you'll see mounds. And,
yeah.
And literally, if you touch the mound at all,
they come boiling out.
100,000 will boil out real quick, and it's very noticeable, and they're all over the South.
Yeah. Welcome to Louisiana.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
It's dangerous down here.
It is, kind of.
Yes.
The other question I had was, the other thing I noticed that I never noticed up north is the ants seem to, we'd always have cobwebs up in the top corners of our house, and they all seem to stay around the floor and the baseboard. Is there a particular reason for that? Because
the cobwebs?
Because it's so hot, or...
Are you talking about cobwebs or ants or what? Cobwebs.
Cobwebs from spiders.
Might be black widow.
Black widows ants. Like to go low, where other ants will build their webs high. And so it depends upon the species of the spider that you have. And when in doubt, just send them to me at LSUS, Dr. Beverly Burden, and make sure you send me contact information, and I can tell you what you have.
Oh, so I might have black widows in my house?
There are many species that build their webs low. There are many species that build your nets high, their webs high. So you can't just generalize it in that manner. You can't just assume that if it's low, it's a black widow.
But if you take a broom and clear it out, you're not in any danger. Black widows literally are reclusive. They don't like to mess with people or anything.
And they're not going to be out in the open. They like to hide.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden, and we have lines open now at 800-552-8502. We have several calls online. Vicki, you're on hold right now, but Patricia from Shreveport, you're online next. What's bugging you? Hello, Patricia?
Hello?
Yes, you're online. Hello. What's bugging you?
Sure, this is Rosalind from Longview.
Oh, well, I got the wrong one then.
Well, thanks for having me. My question is, it's not quite an insect question, but it's a roundabout insect question.
Okay.
There are these gecko-like, salamander-like animals that like to hang out on my porch. They're kind of see-through-ish, kind of tannish colored, and they have a black ringed tail.
Yep.
And whenever I tell people about them, they're like, oh, but they're good. They eat insects. So questions are, what insects do they eat? And is there like a rise in the population of some the insect that they eat that they like to hang out on the porch? And
well,
so
first of all,
how to get rid of them.
These are called Mediterranean geckos, and they are not native to the United States. But here's the cool thing about it. They are occupying a place in the ecosystem that no other lizard occupies. It's called a niche.
Right. What would that niche be?
Niche would be eating bugs on vertical surfaces. And they especially like They'll eat little beetles. They like little flies. Especially mosquitoes. And so mm-hmm. these are very beneficial. And I have a window that looks out on my patio, and I'll uh-huh. see and I'll watch them for several minutes at a time. They're just fascinating mm-hmm. on the way they move and the way
they creep me out.
Oh, but they're good.
Just think of them with an Australian accent, and then you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Because that's what the Geico is what we're talking about.
Yeah, but it doesn't look right.
No.
These are Mediterranean, you see.
Yes, yes.
So they would have a different accent.
Well, that's true. Yeah, more Italian.
Well, thank you so much for taking
Ciao.
Thank you, Rosalind. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And you can give us a call tonight at 800-552-8502. I remember when I first moved to Florida, and I was kind of freaked out by skinks and geckos until mm-hmm. they said they eat the insects. And I was like, oh, well, fine. Then after a while, I just started petting them. And they'd just sit there and let me pet them on the back, ironically. That's kind of funny. We go next to Patricia from Shreveport. We're going to get you online now. Patricia, what's bugging you tonight?
Well, I have a strange type of, I call it a water bug, but it the body is oval, and it look like the rear legs are long and compared to the front leg, and some are kind of short, maybe an inch long, and then some are longer.
Can
but
you?
It looks different than the water. I live near the lake,
mm-hmm.
so it looks different than water bugs that I've seen before.
Can you see their segmentation on their where their abdomen would be?
I haven't seen the stomach of them, but just the back.
Mm-hmm.
And the back seemed to have, some lines across horizontal.
Yeah, that
lines.
Would be the segmentation.
Okay.
Here, water bugs and cockroaches are the same thing. Okay. Now, there are insects that live in the water that are bugs, but what people call water bugs and cockroaches are the same thing. And okay. what you're describing is something that's called the oriental cockroach. It's a medium-sized cockroach. It's not as large as the American cockroach or as small as the German cockroach. And the water bugs that you're describing, the oriental cockroaches, do like to have very moist, warm areas. You'll find them a lot hanging around basements where the washer and dryer are. And they're not as harmful as the German cockroaches, so just be aware of that.
Okay, so what caused them? The dampness?
Yes, ma'am. And if you want to control them, get a bottle of what we call boric acid, follow the instructions, and that's an excellent chemical to put down that's not harmful to pets, children, or adults. Boric acid, B-O-R-I-C-K.
I have a friend who lived in Africa, and they were using it for roaches infestation.
Boric acid, yes. Same thing.
Okay, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Patricia.
You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. And we still have time for your calls at 800-552-8502. We have Randy online from Baton Rouge. Please hang on. John is up before you. John from Longview, what's bugging you tonight?
Yes, I pretty much got the ant and the wasp stuff under control. But what's really bugging me is these little white bugs that are flying around. They call them, everybody's been calling them aphids, and they're attacking my trees, and they just get up in your face like mosquitoes would. Mm-hmm. And that's what's bugging me.
Let me ask you this, John. What kind of trees are you seeing these in?
Well, I'm not sure what kind of trees they are. I cut them down because they were starting to turn black, and one of them was close to my garden, and it was causing my garden to not produce properly.
I think you've got two situations here. I think you do have aphids, because aphids will excrete a very diluted sugar solution that then attracts black mold.
Okay.
And aphids do not normally fly. They do have a period in their life cycle in which they fly, but they're not going to be flying in large amounts. Right now, we have a lot of what we call white midges. that are out and about. They're very much like gnats, but they're a little bit, they're not as stout-bodied as a gnat, but they're called midges. And they are oftentimes attracted to around your eyes. They're a big pest with cattle and horses sometimes because it just aggravates them, and they won't eat, and they'll start to lose weight. And so what you can do to avoid them is to avoid being outside because they're just everywhere.
Right, right. Okay, so there's really nothing you can do to keep them down around your, like your patio or...
Well, there is a pyrethrin insecticide. They're kind of called yard foggers. You know, before you go outside, you can spray them around your patio, and it'll temporarily knock down most flying insects. But if you're out there in and out during the day, then that would not be feasible.
Right. Yeah. Well, see, I spend a lot of time out here, you know, clearing property and stuff. And
yeah.
I look up in these certain trees. I don't know what kind of tree they are, but there are certain trees that they seem to flock to. And when I get close to one, they start coming out, and it's just driving me crazy.
Now, there is an insect that's actually called a white fly, but they normally don't fly unless the plant is heavily disturbed. And then they'll fly up like a cloud, and then they'll land right back down on the vegetation. But they're just not out about flying around. And the white flies are very closely associated and related to aphids, but that doesn't sound like what you're experiencing at all, John.
Right. These are kind of like like if you're burning wood or something.
Sure.
The ash is just kind of floating around.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, you're out in nature. Mother Nature's going to have her way.
Okay.
And she's good at it too.
Absolutely.
yeah, exactly. All right, well, I thank y'all, and y'all have a good evening.
You too, John.
Thanks for calling. You are listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burton. We still have time for another phone call or two. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Randy from Baton Rouge, you're up next. What's bugging you tonight?
Yes, thanks for taking the call. Your caller before this last one hit on something that I had a question about. We have in our kitchen these little black sugar ants. I guess that's what they're actually called. I don't know. I don't know what they really are, but very, very small ants. Don't know where they're coming from. And we're having a huge amount of problem getting rid of these things. And I didn't want to put, my wife wanted to take everything out of the pantries and spray everything with an insecticide. And I said, you know, I'm not real comfortable with that, having insecticide in the pantry. But I got to studying a little bit about it. And on the internet, it seems like diatomaceous earth works as far as killing the ants off. So my first question is that a good approach to ants, inside and or out? And also, you had mentioned boric acid, and is boric acid and borax the same thing? Because I've also found instructions of mixing borax with a thick liquid like a syrup to attract insects to kill them off.
Your best solution, I agree, is not to spray insecticide against in your pantry. I wouldn't do that either. Do they make trails, or they just seem to be running everywhere?
They seem to be. It's we can go for days and days and never see one. But boy, if you leave anything out that's sweet, they'll congregate. And,
right.
And there's no real, you know, no real
right.
indication as to where they came from.
This is what I would do if it was my house. There are some very, very effective ant baits that mm-hmm. you can use. And they will come. They will be attracted to the ant baits. They will take the poisonous ant bait back to the colony. That way you do not have to find out where the colony is at all.
Right.
And there are different companies that make them. One's just about as good as the other one. And I would set ant baits out, and that way you're also monitoring their populations. The other thing that I would do is wherever they seem to be coming from, you said you couldn't tell, but the areas where you see them a lot, I would take a very dilute solution of either bleach or vinegar, and that's going to mess up their sensory perceptions, and so they won't be able to be they won't be able to pick up cues that, oh, there's a cookie over there, because that will you know, just mess them up.
Right.
And so try those two things and see if it works, Randy. I hope that works for you.
I have one other quick question.
Sure.
In Baton Rouge, we just recently had a really horrible flood.
I know it. Everybody from North Louisiana, our hearts just go out to you guys.
It was just unbelievable. But the problem we've had since the flood is that there are two things that have really come about. One of them is gnats, and the other one are these little small moths that are in the yard. And the gnat population seems to be getting a little better, but what I was also wanting to do is to put something out that would attract and kill the gnats. And here again, I found something on the internet about mixing a little bit of soap with some vinegar and setting it out, and it'll attract them and they'll go to it and get in there and die. So I didn't know if that was effective or not.
It's certainly worth a try, and there's enough signs there to warrant that. Let me go back. Dichotomous earth for ants, forget about it. That's not going to work at all.
Okay.
But the soap and vinegar for the gnats, and it may actually work a little bit with the moths, but instead of doing vinegar, I'd add some sugar in there.
Yeah, and the moths are outside, so that's not really much of a problem.
We don't care about them there.
And then the birds and the geckos will take care of those, I would assume. So
yes, sir.
But so I'll try that.
Baits for the ants, and the soap and vinegar for the gnats.
Okay, will do. Well, I appreciate
good luck, Randy.
In the diatomaceous earth, as far as.
It's only good for soft-bodied insects like slugs and caterpillars and things like that.
Okay. It kind of indicated that it would stick to their body and cut the...
Like they said, everything you read on the internet isn't true.
Sure it is. You know it is if it's on the internet.
Right.
Well, I do appreciate it. Thanks for taking my call.
You betcha, Randy. Thank you. And you are listening to What's Bugging You. We've got two calls online right now. We're going to try to get to both of them quick. So, Ella, you're up next. What's your question, please?
My question is that I want to know how to tell if a butterfly is a monarch butterfly. And... I want to know how to track their migration.
Okay. First of all, how can you tell it's a monarch butterfly? It's going to be a very big orange moth with black stripings. But if on the hind wing it has a black band all the way across, that's going to be the viceroy that mimics the monarch. And how to track, there are actually websites you can go to. There are basically two populations, a western population and an eastern population, that go from the United States to Mexico and from Mexico back into the east or west coast in the upper Midwest. And just go to those monarch tracking sites on the web, and it's really a cool thing. It'd be a very good thing for you to share at school.
All right, and we're going to try to get our last caller in quickly. We have 2 minutes, Brian. Brian from Leesville, what's your question tonight? What's bugging you?
Yes, sir. I have been walking through the woods lately, and I think it's been 2 days ago. I was bitten by a fruit spider on my arm. I was wondering if there was any way. I have a spot about the size of a half dollar swelled up on my arm, and I've been hot patching it. I was wondering if you had any advice as to how to get the swelling down and the pain that is radiating from it.
You said it was a fruit spider?
Yes, that's what my grandmother always called it, a fruit spider, a banana spider. Those are the big, large yellow spiders.
Yeah, those are the big aragope spiders. And most people don't react like that, so you must be hypersensitive to it. And I can't really give out medical advice. I'm a PhD, not an MD.
Go to a doctor.
but just do the common sense things, ice packs, and it wouldn't hurt if you went ahead and got on to the doctor. You might be you might have a secondary infection set up in there with microbes, but with bacteria. That's not uncommon with some spider bites. Good luck with that, Brian. Yeah, I don't think you'll be okay. Just watch it close.
All right. You have been listening to What's Bugging You with our resident entomologist, Dr. Beverly Burden. She is a professional associate professor of biology at LSUS. This program was produced tonight by Dr. Beverly Burden and Bill Beckett with help from Monty Levitt, Martin Brigham, and Wally Derleth. This program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of Louisiana. Stay tuned. We have Radiolab coming up next here on Red River Radio.